journeys on Revolution Radio on freedomslips.com and simulcast with wolfspiritradio.com. Join JP, your tour guide today, on this journey of discovery from the known to the unknown in search of enlightenment, knowledge, and truth.
Yea, verily, it is indeed the 2nd of December, 2013. This is Journeys with JP. We are being broadcast and simulcast through Wolf Spirit Radio, originating from Revolution Radio at freedomslips.com, and also being piped through to noborderradio.co.uk and everbeyond.info/radio. And if you want to join us, probably the best place is the Wolf Spirit Radio chat room. So that's wowwowwow.wolfspiritradio.com/wolfchat. Tonight, my guest is somebody that I've been trying to, I've almost been chasing you across the Americas, my dear. We've had hiccup after interruption after false start after, you know, all these different, interruptions. Tonight is the night. We speak with Katharina Edwards, and we've finally tracked her down to a small conference room in Costa Rica. How are you?
You know, I'm doing quite well. I'm getting a little bit of feedback on your end, though.
You will until I fade my mic down, and then it goes away. So, so welcome, and welcome to Journeys, and. Journeys is really the place where we discuss the lessons that we've learned from our personal journey, really. Everybody's coming in the room now, aren't they?
I shushed them.
So, actually, the best thing is, rather than me doing all the talking, if you do all the talking, then you don't have any trouble with background sounds, apart from, you know, you throw things at them if they make too much noise.
Yes, I will throw things at them if they make too much noise.
Well,
so, I feel like last night I kind of left things off in a bit of a scattered energy. So I feel like I need to kind of clean that up a little bit.
Okay, well, do you want to kind of recap on it and then bring it back to where it was and then take it forward?
Yeah, for sure. Let me know when you're turning down your mic.
It's off. Yeah, I'll do it.
Okay. So last night, as some of you might know, if you are listening, you noticed that I only was on for about 20 minutes of the whole 2 hours that I was scheduled for. And I had been on my way to Costa Rica from Portland, Oregon, and making a big long trip of it. You know, from the first night I got there, well, it was the morning rather, I spent, you know, an entire 24 hours in the airport waiting for some friends to land. It was misconnections and, you know, people missing flights, and it was just a very interesting time. And needless to say, I also, you know, arrived in a foreign country where I do not speak the language, and I have been feeling some very interesting senses of helplessness. And kind of, and I'll tie into some more stories about that in a little bit. But the overall theme I spoke of last night was a little bit about relationship, and I think that all of these themes and topics really tie together pretty well. And the whole idea of, you know, being in a foreign country and being helpless, you feel like you're kind of suspended in midair. And you know, I was telling JP that I'm over here with a group of friends who are all, you know, entrepreneurs and marketers and that kind of thing, and, you know, some artistic-y types as well. But the common theme that we're having is that we're all just seeking, you know, higher inspiration, higher joy, higher expressions of ourselves. And along that path, I've been finding that we keep bumping up into, you know, opportunities for growth, so to speak. That's nice ways of putting, you know, inconvenient circumstances.
Yeah, other people have other words for it. Shift happens, you know.
Shift happens, yeah, that's it. So, I mean, in the past 3 days, 4 days, it's been a very, very, very intense ride for me. And I think that's where a lot of the misalignments were coming from, JP. Just the fact that there was so much happening and it just wasn't the right time yet to connect. So, there's so much that I could jump into. I'm curious, where is it that you would really fancy that I start?
Well, where do I fancy you start? since this is a slightly different audience to the Sunday shows, it mm-hmm. might and well, okay. So start somewhere near the beginning, given that we're all on the path and mm-hmm. that you had a certain instance at which point you realized something. You know, you were you said you were kind of in the corporate world
corporate world? No, I have never actually had a traditional job, ever.
Mm-hmm.
So, where I can start, I mean, how far back are you talking? Are you talking about what I was speaking with you about the other night, or more?
Well, it's basically, most people have an awakening, and
yes,
it's called various things, but it's an awakening. Okay. It could be called a car crash, how more or less gentle was this awakening? Because some people's are very rude.
They come in waves, honestly. I feel like I've had, you know, two or three smaller awakening, so to speak, under a greater umbrella of just overall over the past 3 years. But more or less, my journey really begun when I was about 17, and I realized I was about to die. And you may wonder that's really dramatic, you know? I mean, it typically is really dramatic, but...
well, you know what teenagers are like, you know? But yeah. It was probably quite life-threatening. What was the condition you were in?
I had severe anorexia, and I was under a lot of just physical, emotional stress from familial issues, from issues such as, you know, my sister being, you know, borderline personality disorder, you know, families, just chaos, madness. And, you know, here I am trying to cope with all of it all throughout. You know, I think that there a lot of growth comes from family turmoil, but this actually manifested itself in, like, disease for myself and mental disease and just, you know, cultural influences and everything like that just really affected me in that way. And I realized that I was really, really close to the end when I'm, like, standing there soaking wet 98 pounds and my body is just reacting. You know, my fingernails turning blue, my hair falling out, you know, just realizing this. And there was a point where I realized that my heart was racing so fast that I could have a heart attack at any minute. And it dawned on me. You know, I had spent all this time in really deep, deep self-loathing and deep self-hatred. And just really wanting to change everything about me and change my identity from, you know, this person who I thought had all of these issues and problems and came from this certain kind of family. And I wanted to purify myself of that, so to speak. So we do crazy things when we believe that we're not whole, you know? So that kind of was a big wake up call. I was in France and, I all of a sudden just started realizing I need to heal myself. I need to really heal this thinking. I really need to, if I want to live to see my future, you know, the future that I dreamed of for so long as being so bright and full and, like, just so rich, but I couldn't do it if I was still continuing to have self-defeating thoughts, self-defeating actions, you know, starving myself on a spiritual level, on a mental level, you know, physically, of course, but I moved along. And as I started healing, I came up against my own resistance quite a bit, you know, just as anyone does when they decide that they're going to do something. You know, they resolve that they're going to get better, but then the universe kind of laughs at you a little bit and is like, oh yeah? Prove it. So I, about 2 months after I decided I was going to get started, I realized that, you know, I should probably go see a doctor if I'm going to, you know, do all this. And she actually informed me that I had, you know, all of these crazy hormonal imbalances. She told me that, you know, I basically got a really good scolding from her. And I needed it because I was under this delusion that there's like nothing wrong with me, even though I had all these things going on. But I came to many points of surrender along the way, you know, realizing that this was not going to be an easy journey. I was going to have to go through many, many, many painful evolutions along the way where I would incur, you know, the discomfort of, you know, refeeding yourself, the discomfort of having to rebuild your body, the discomfort of having to go through the physical changes, you know, appearance-wise, from going to, you know, size zero pants to, you know, size 10, where it's just kind of like this whole loss of identity, this crisis, so to speak, because I had formed an image around this woman who was very frail, yet, you know, tried to be strong, tried to persevere, you know, powered through anything. This person who really, you know, had her shit together, and she would make sure she would tell you if you didn't have yours together. You know, the whole proverb of having, seeing a stick in someone else's eye and not seeing the log in your own, right? So, that's where...
But that's, you know, that's certainly, it's a phase that many, many people go through.
And, indeed,
you know,
indeed.
Everybody who comes along to the whole... consciousness, stroke, new age, stroke, truth movement, whatever you might want to call it, I don't think it's got to have, well, this new paradigm, let's put it there. Anybody comes across that, one of the first things that you do is reject it, and say how stupid it is, and, you know, and then things keep getting proved to you that it's not that stupid, and, that it might be that you're behaving in a stupid way because you've been made stupid by somebody telling you something, a lie that you actually believe in, like, you know.
I agree.
Yeah.
It's interesting how that whole process happens, right? Because you... I look back at my behavior at the time, and it was very self-righteous, very, very vindictive, very, you know, I'll prove it to you, I'll show you, blah, 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 blah. And the universe had a very funny way of humbling me and just bringing me down quite a few notches to the point where I was just stripped of a lot of the vanity and indignant, righteous attitude that I had towards the world that I'd inherited from my culture, that I'd inherited from just my upbringing.
Yeah, these are things that these are lies, basically, you know.
Mm-hmm.
We're, you know, people always say, you know, it was my conditioning.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's just like being beaten like a horse, you know.
It is. And when you choose to actually start going through that process of realizing, you know, the falsity of it, it's very painful. And I experienced a lot of loss of identity because of the things that I had identified with, you know, being size zero, blonde, skinny, beautiful, blah, 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 blah. Like, all of these things, those are just being taken from me in this way where I needed to crumble away those identifications because it wasn't serving me at that time in my life. You know, I actually ended up having, you know, braces and, you know, face full of cystic acne, and my whole identity with myself was just challenged. And throughout that process, it was very interesting because I realized that I had other gifts, and that my worth was not ultimately deemed by the things that made me externally approvable, you know. I had this deep sense of connection with my own internal world that I chose to express through writing and painting, and that's actually how I became a painter and a writer, was because I had all of these really, really hard to swallow experiences that, you know, I could not relate to other people. I just did not have the words for them. And, I mean, I don't really think many people understand what it feels like to go to that extremes of physical deterioration and then try to walk through that path to come back to life. That depth of spiritual depravity and try to come back to vibrancy, you know? So it was a very, very interesting process that I charted out religiously, you know, through volumes of writing and hundreds of paintings and just, you know, and I don't think people to this day really understand it, which is why I'm on these radio shows talking about it now, because I have more clarity about the whole process. But I think that, you know, it's truthful, like that, oh, this happens more often than we think. And where was I going on that story? Okay, so back to the story. Moving along, identity,
losing myself. It and recreating it, yeah. Recreating yourself.
Recreating it in a sense where I could identify with more than just the physical, where I could be okay with whatever my physical form was going to take, and letting go and trusting the process that creation made me and creation can make me again. And knowing that my domain really was on the mental and the spiritual levels, where I know that I had a say in the process. I didn't really necessarily have a say in the physical process. I just continued to do the things that my doctor told me to do, and if I saw it wasn't working for a period of time, I would switch doctors and, you know, move on and try a different approach. But, you know, the control freak in you always kind of wants to, like, have so much say in that, you know, like, this isn't working, why is it not working, doctor, blah, 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 there's something, and then getting into blame and everything like that. That's a tangent. My point with that is that the whole sphere of mental is where I knew that my real work was at, and that's where I started becoming interested in, you know, belief work and changing, you know, your mindset and being able to be okay with the way that things are. So really, my sickness is what led me to this path of spirituality and this, you know, seeking path. It was because I wanted answers and I wanted solace. I wanted comfort in the fact that everything around me was so uncertain. You know, my life was uncertain. My relationships were uncertain. Everything just felt so transient. And there was a significant discomfort in that. You know, I used to suffer with really terrible anxiety just around that topic because, you know, I went through many deaths in a single year, you know, realizing that everything is very impermanent. And all of us go through that at some point where we're faced with our own mortality, and sometimes us unlucky ones are faced with our own mortality. And we realize that the only things that we really have at the end of the day are our experiences, the relationships we have, and, you know, how we feel about ourselves at the end of the day. It took a lot for me to start to become comfortable with myself. You know, when we go into, like, you know, avenues of meditation or avenues of wanting to become closer with ourselves, we often find that there is a lot of hatred there and a lot of discomfort in being with yourself, you know, alone. And that's where people, you know, start picking up addictions and habits, you know, to try to quell the mind and to keep it from racing, right? So mine just happened to be overachieving and workaholism and, like, that kind of thing. I was very preoccupied with trying to control the external areas of my life so I could feel in control more so of the mental sphere. And when I quit, you know, trying to do that stuff, like trying to hold on so tightly, you know, it was my senior year of high school. I had discontinued taking, you know, the behavioral medications that they were giving me, you know, like for, you know, quote unquote ADD that they had me on for like 5 years, stimulants. I joke with my family members, they call it crack, but,
yeah, I never got that, you know, I never got, why do they give these kids who are already bouncing around the walls even more stuff to make them bounce even harder?
What it does to people with certain brain chemistry is it actually calms them down and makes them more obedient. So that's what it did to me, and it really deadened a part of me where I felt just like I was a prisoner to my thoughts and to society's expectations of me.
So it really actually reflects reality.
Yeah.
Because that's really what's true, isn't it? And so that, you see, it didn't
that
work.
That was a part of the letting go for me, was just letting go of that and letting go of the idea that I needed that to function. And I realized that I had a gift to think of things in a more abstract, nonlinear way, but that actually didn't fly too well with, you know, the public school system, you know. So I went from being like a straight A student on my crack, you know, my uppers, to being kind of like a B, C student, and I just didn't go to school very much. And I spent a lot of time reflecting on my life and the things that were very pressing concerns to me, things that I felt were a lot more beyond things that typical 17, 18-year-olds were going through at that time, you know, trying to recover their life to the point where they could, you know, graduate and move on and hopefully have some semblance of security in the near future. But, yeah, so that's where I started, like, really heavily writing a lot and doing a lot of introspection into where the sleeping dogs were lying. You know, I knew that I had a lot of unfinished business with my father. You know, he sexually traumatized my sister when she was 8 years old, and that disrupted our whole family. And the whole lineage of that carried on such heartache for the next 10 years that it just totally ruined my idea of what my life should do and be, because, you know, you have this notion in your head of what it's going to be like. You know, you're going to grow up, have a loving family, you know, go to college, get a good job, get married, have kids, do the whole thing. And it sounded really nice to me at the time. I was like, yeah, normal. It sounds awesome. But then there came a point when I started to become more comfortable with the fact that I don't think that I'm ever going to be normal. You know, my life experiences are too different, and I don't relate to people on that level. And I don't resonate with that anymore. I wanted to so badly, so I tried to fit myself and shape myself to be part of that mold. And that letting go process of me was me becoming more comfortable with the fact that I am not, and I never will be, and that's okay, because I'm unique in my own way, and I have my own gifts and my own abilities and my own sense of self that actually impacts and touches more lives than I could ever be as a cookie cutter, you know? And that's kind of the one of the gems that I gleaned from reclaiming my own sense of identity aside from the dysfunctional, you know, trying to be normal parts of me. And with that, you know, came lots of its own challenges, and that's how I end up in places like Costa Rica on a whim, and like stuck in airports for 24 hours, and, you know, just living on the seat of my pants, or flying by the seat of my pants. But it's such a more exciting way for me to live. It's such a more exciting way for me to experience my life. And I think that really reconnecting with that sense of vibrance and joy is what ultimately has healed me from, you know, those illnesses and that dysfunction, was because that's what I lost. in the whole process of trying to conform to societal expectations, I lost my joy. I lost my vibrance. I lost the real Katarina that shone brightly like a star when she was, you know, a little kid. Sometimes even, like, when I would journal or something like that, I would have a picture nearby of that little Katarina that just had this toothless grin that was just so freaking happy. You know, before she realized that, you know, the world is a scary, dark place sometimes, and before she realized that people can be very, very malicious, before she realized that, you know, things don't always happen your way, things don't always go as the way that you want them to. But
that can be a big disappointment.
it's very disappointing. It's very heartbreaking and disappointing when you realize that. So I actually just talking with the woman here, Judith, about that, you know, you realizing you lose that sense of fantasy almost. But it's like this disillusionment process. And then I think that when I really lost that, I was about 12 years old, and I started to undergo a very deep depression that lasted for, you know, 6 years, just very, very intensely. And that's where, you know, in hopes of finding some sort of normalcy, I tried to, you know, conform to society and conform to expectations and, you know, do everything the right way, be that good girl, get the pats on the head, get the approval, get the praise, and, you know, try to go about my life that way. But I realized ultimately it was really not fulfilling and it was killing me. So later on, you know, I ended up developing like fibromyalgia and chronic fatigue, and I was bedridden for a very long time after I graduated high school, you know, a year with like tremendous body pain. And through that, it was probably the most excruciating experience of my life, but I'm so thankful. And I don't mean to sound trite or corny, because I know there's some of you out there who are probably struggling with fibromyalgia and chronic pain, and I don't mean to discredit this in any way, but it really showed me how much of my own suffering I was causing by my own resistance to me, and actually my own resistance to myself, to me being myself to the fullest, to me being fully self-expressed. It was my resistance to being happy, as weird as that sounds. I always wanted to blame everyone else for my problems, and, you know, this happened, so I reacted this way, and it's all his fault, and it's all my dad's fault for doing that to my sister, and it's all my stepdad's fault for everything that ever happened to me, and it's his fault for not believing in me, and it's her fault for being crazy, and la 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 la. You know, and I got so tightly wrapped in all of those stories that it was hostage. It was like prison. And I don't know if how many of you understand or realize the prison that we hold ourselves in from a day-to-day basis, just with all of our projections and our beliefs and the distrust of other people and the distrust of ourselves and just all the stories we get wrapped in and all the crap that we smear ourselves with. And you know, this process has been like me just gently taking the hose and just rinsing myself off and coming out, you know, realizing that I don't have to smell like shit all the time. My thinking does not have to be shitty all the time. And the process of becoming more self-aware is really that wiping of the lens, you know, where you kind of just day by day just realize that, oh, wait, I have control of how I'm perceiving this right now, and I have tools, and I have the ability to be sovereign, and I have the ability to speak my mind, speak my truth, speak my heart, and be heard, and to actually really listen to other people and take with a grain of salt, you know, the criticisms that they throw your way, and, you know, be open to people having something negative to say about you so you can explore that deeper, and you can you can not reject the external as much, because you realize that it's just reflecting something about the internal state of being that you are choosing to carry at this time. So that's really, in a nutshell, kind of my process of, you know, coming from the darkness and blooming. And it's not that I don't go back into darkness and I don't bloom again. I mean, just today, actually, I had a fall outside walking over the bridge just walking back up to the house where we're staying here in Costa Rica. I was, you know, paying attention to something else. I was paying attention to my friend's hand. He was carrying a bag of groceries. The circulation had been cutting off from his hand, and I was like, oh, let me look at it, you know, and just trying to be helpful. And I walk along, and I stumble, and I twisted my ankle, and I fell. And it all hit me so quickly that I was just like, whoa, what happened? And the process really took me into this state of feeling extremely helpless, where I just realized that, you know, there was nothing I could do right now. I can't walk, and my ankle is in the most tremendous pain it's been in since, you know, I tore all the ligaments in it when I was like 11 years old and was on crutches for 3 months, you know. I went back to this state of fear, this panic, you know, fearing like, oh my God, I'm on my bad ankle. Oh no, like this whole story that I had just constructed because of the fear of repeating the past. So luckily I was with my two good guy friends and they were able to help assist me up to the door, and I hobbled along and I noticed my pride coming up and me wanting to, you know, be like, no, I got it, I'm fine, even though I was crying and I had tears in my eyes and, you know, I just couldn't control that. There was a sense of, like, weakness and vulnerability that, you know, I feel like we all struggle with that from time to time. And, you know, even me getting on this call, sharing with you all of my past experiences and stuff like that, I still struggle with that sometimes. You know, not wanting to be weak, not wanting to be ashamed, and not wanting to let other people take care of us in a way that makes us feel like we are a burden to someone, or making people feel inconvenienced or something. We come up with all of these stories about how our current situation is affecting other people, yet the funny thing was is that my friends were demonstrating a willingness, and just kind of, it was commonplace for them to take care of someone who was in a state like that. You know, one of them used to be an EMT. You know, he would take care of people who were dying all the time, and I, for some reason I thought I was different than that. And my other friend was a medical assistant for many years. So they were, you know, they doctored up my ankle, they put the ice on it, they put on the oils, the aromatherapy oils to try to reduce swelling. You know, they were taking care of me, they fed me, they, you know, made sure that I had everything I needed, you know, squirted me to the bathroom if I needed that, and, you know, and there was just this overwhelming sense of helplessness, though, that I just could not get past, because I have felt those feelings before, you know, when I was bedridden. I have felt that when I, you know, really couldn't do much for myself. And the feeling is so horribly embarrassing and so, so absolutely vulnerable that you realize that this kind of thing could happen to you at any time. You know, I had no plans of that happening. You know, here I am, we're having a great old time, you know, we are just walking around Costa Rica, having so much fun, absorbing the scenery, and then all of a sudden, I just stumbled. And I went into this state of despair where everything felt so uncertain and unsure, and I felt vulnerable and scared. So my point in telling you that story is that we can have a lot of insight in those moments of vulnerability and helplessness, because it can show us more about ourselves. And if we're able to openly communicate that with other people, and as well as ourselves, we can open into that deeper and have compassion for ourselves and allow others to have compassion for us and to love us. And that's something that I think for those of us who have struggled with, you know, feelings of self-loathing and self-worth issues and issues of, you know, not feeling like you deserve that kind of attention or that kind of accommodation, you know, we can push that stuff away even though we actually really needed it. Like for me in this instance, like I actually was hobbling around with a cane earlier thanks to Judith. She supplied me with a cane. But I was almost too proud to do that because I was like, oh no, I've got it together. Oh no, I can do this. I'm an independent woman. I don't need no cane. Yeah. So that's where I'm at. I'm just, luckily my ankle feels a ton better now, but Although, if it didn't, I don't know if I'd be able to be on this call with you, JP.
Well, you know, it was so interesting because you kind of preempted what I would say is that, you know, you getting into that state, that panic state that then reminded you of when you were young. You know, this is part of my process that I work with all the time. You know, people talk about things that happen in the now that are just like a reflection of what happened when they were a kid as a trauma. Mm-hmm. And that it's actually an opportunity for healing the original trauma. And then when you do that, suddenly you don't have an ankle problem anymore. And which ankle was it?
It's my left ankle, actually.
Your left ankle. So, and then I would say that would be a female Aquarian.
What?
So, if you know any female Aquarians in your life, there may be a key into that. But
well, I have an Aquarius rising, or not moon. We've already discussed that.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not sure.
So, but you see that, you know, every physical issue is part of a large conversation. Your body tells you things.
Yeah.
And so it was, so you were able to also go back to that past thing and reevaluate that as well, were you?
Yeah, because I mean, this isn't the first time something like that has, like, triggered me into fearing, you know, becoming helpless and vulnerable and weak again. And it's almost like a cancer patient that, you know, they've gone into remission and then they have, like, a sign of cancer reemerging and then they just become terrified and paralyzed and they just go into all of this belief and story about that happening again and, you know, reliving the terror of chemotherapy and reliving the horrors of, you know, losing their hair and getting sick. And, you know, it's just a very loaded thing. And for me, you know, being put up on bed rest with my foot up in, you know, on a pillow and having ice on it just reminded me too much of, you know, being in bed for days on end where I, you know, I could not move because the pain was so great. And, you know, it was just this shrinking feeling, you know, like where I felt like the world was closing in around me and, you know, it felt like everyone else was having fun and I had like this fear of missing out and I was hobbling around because I wanted to be a part of the conversation. I wanted to be a part of what was happening and I would do that, you know, even when I was sick before. I would get myself up and, you know, go lay on the couch so I could be a part of the conversation because I didn't want to be missed out. I didn't want to miss out on anything. You know, I wanted to be involved and a part of something bigger than my personal pain and problems. So it's funny just how these little isolated events or seemingly isolated events actually carry such significance, you know. Two male friends, they have no idea of the process that I've been going through tonight. You know, they've been carrying on just with their lives and their busy happenings and everything like that. And, you know, I don't really think that this is for them to understand because unless they've been through something similar, or have some sort of level of empathy, I don't really think it's easy for people to relate. And I'm sure that there's even some people on the call tonight who, you know, really can't relate to my story and that's okay because it's not for them. It's for the people who have been through it and, you know, can empathize and they can have their own healing from my sharing, and which is why I feel comfortable getting on a call like this and just divulging. It's because I know that the people who are in alignment with it will be the ones that hear it. People who aren't, you know, it will go in one ear and out the other, you know.
Maybe you should play them the archive once you've done the show. Hi guys, hope you're enjoying it.
Hi guys.
I've got more out of her in half an hour than you have in 3 days. All right, okay. Meanwhile, wow. So you have. I mean, you've got this. It's like a very old-fashioned way of saying progressive attitude, in that your attitude progresses and is able to reconstitute itself given new data.
Yeah,
which I think is, you know, in the modern world, in our ever-changing world, this is the mental set
it's not a mindset because it's not set, but it's the mental approach to take. Because, well, actually, being an internet radio host is a really good training for that. Because, you know, things happen all the time that go wrong. And you just have to keep carrying on and cope with it. And with Skype, there's, you know, so my modem might drop. Well, I'll keep recording because the archive will be fine. You know, my guest will go. Well, I'll put some tune on to keep the audience, you know, not feeling lonely and left out. So, yeah, so you've spent a lot of time isolated in a way that has given you this approach to the world that is, you know, it's more considered. You consider things before you move into them nowadays.
I'm really grateful too for all that alone time, just because it's like, you know, eventually you get past that like self-hating part and then you just start to kind of like yourself and like your company. You actually kind of have fun being by yourself. Like, so oftentimes I would rather actually be, you know, alone or like maybe with like one person than spending a lot of time with a lot of people, just because I really find a lot of deep contentment there. It's only actually been within like the past, I'd say 6 months to a year or so that I started actually branching out.
And there, as I say, people drop off the.
Realizing that,
there we are.
You know, this energy, this excitement, this love within me could be shared. Huh? What are you saying?
All right. So you got cut off there for about 10 seconds. I thought, oh, I'm going to hear that bloop bloop once again, but no, you came back. So.
What was the last thing you heard me say?
Shared. Sorry. But we were talking about basically the opportunity to re-examine and re-evaluate those feelings that, you know, things that happen in the now, you know, e.g. Slipping over and hurting your ankle, then brought back a flood of feelings. It was like a trigger. So that then gives you the opportunity to, while you're laying in bed doing nothing, while you're laying there, why not think about and reevaluate these childhood experiences that you could reprocess? And you've been taking the opportunity to do so. Oh, that's right. We were talking about being alone and being alone.
Yeah, and actually starting to like yourself because when you get past all the self-hate, you know, and realize that that's fundamentally not true. At the deepest core level of ourselves, there is just nothing but love, and that's been my experience. There's been nothing but just this sense of peace. And the self-hatred is just this tape running in your head. And when you go past that, you realize that that was nothing more than just like a passing dark gray cloud covering up the eternally blue and vibrant sky. And the sun is always shining there, you know? Sometimes the clouds just kind of cover it up a bit. And eventually the clouds move out of the way and you can see the sun in the sky again. But when you realize that the clouds, they move and then they come back, you have that memory of the sky being blue and the sky having the sun. And so then it's easier to remember, oh wait, yeah, the sky is actually quite sunny and it feels really nice and warm, and that experience is really exhilarating to me. And so when another little gray cloud comes by, it doesn't have as much significance and impact on you because you are holding so fond of memories of the sun. I hope you understood that metaphor.
You have a reference point. And you're shifting your reference point from, say, a grey cloudy blanket, like living in, like growing up in London, that was like a grey cloudy blanket.
and coming into a place where, I tell you, the skies are fantastic here, and the clouds are amazing. Even on a grey blanket day, very rare, actually, just a grey blanket. Sometimes, but the clouds are just always spectacular. It just looks like a painting. It's like that picture on my Facebook page with the cows.
You have an appreciation of it. You know, even now, I have an appreciation of darker emotions, you know? I think it's so funny when people, you know, get so love and lighty on everything and they have such resistance to feeling sad feelings or angry feelings or bad feelings. And it's just like, no, guys, you don't need to be that way. If you actually, like, can take in that experience and just value it for what it is and then realize that it passes just as quickly as those clouds. I mean, it's funny that you just mentioned that you appreciate those gray cloudy days. I appreciate my gray cloudy days, you know? Like, if I'm having a very sad day where I just, you know, want to listen to sad music and I want to cry a lot and I want to write sad poetry, you know, I allow it. I allow it to happen. And there's a great healing that comes in that. And there doesn't need to be some spiritual correctness of, you know, oh, I have to be happy all the time, otherwise I'm not doing my spiritual path right, or, oh, you know, this, or, oh, you know, I have to have it all together and I have to be happy, happy, joy, joy for everyone around me because my positive attitude needs to inspire others, blah, 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 blah. No, some of my most inspirational things have come from the depths of my darkness, not the heights of my light.
Absolutely. Some of the most inspiring songs have come from depths of pain. You know, and you know, the height of annoyance, for instance, across the universe. when he says words are flying out like endless rain into a paper cup, he's talking about Yoko. She was just going on one. She was on one, and she was just like blah 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 blah, and the words are flying out like endless rain. So. It depends on your way of dealing with the realities that you're in, that you find yourself in, isn't it? And how you work it. Like you say, you know, people can sit around, you know, oh, I've broken my arm, or I've got this thing. And what they've just got is what they need, which is a break. You know, some people are just not, they don't listen to the signs of their body. And all, as far as I'm concerned, all illness, all dis-ease is a result of an attempted conversation between your body and yourself, your conscious
That's
mind.
That's exactly how I feel. Because what happened to me was, you know, really, like, if you want to look at, like, the big grand scheme of everything, that happens, like, typically when people have things like adrenal fatigue, that's really just their body telling them they need a break and that they've been putting out far too much for far too long, and you need to kind of retract and focus on your own energy for a little while. That's exactly what I did. And, you know, I lost a lot of friendships and a lot of relationships because of it, because I was, you know, falsely making them think that here I was, like, ready and available to people please all the time and, you know, get their approval and everything like that. But, you know, retracting and becoming more true to myself was the process that I needed to happen in there. And even this little incident with my ankle showed me that I really need to stop focusing so much on spending my energy, you know, interacting with, you know, my friends here and, you know, the external experience of, you know, being in a foreign country. And I really needed to take some time to just slow down and kind of become a little less ambitious for a little bit, you know, and to just come back into the contemplative state, because I, you know, for the past week, it's just been nonstop, just external interaction and not much time for internal reflection. So I really deeply appreciate it, because, you know, had I not had that experience, I probably would have gotten on this call with you, JP, or not gotten on this call with you at all, and would have still been like a rambling, you know, nonsensical person like I was last night, because I was so, like, overstimulated, you know? It didn't really make much sense. And I think about that experience, and I'm like, I know why that was happening. It's because here I was having all of these insights and experiences and everything like that, and I hadn't really had time to process it yet, you know? So.
Yeah. So last night was a very brief moment when you came on, incidentally, we've got to put a shout out to our mutual friend Dave Kelso, who introduced me to you, and he came on about 5 minutes after you managed to come on. He said, "Oh, I'm sorry, I'm late." I was like, "Yeah, it's all right, mate. she was late as well." So he was even though he thought he was really late, he was more or less in sync with you. So well
That's
done,
funny.
Dave.
He and I are like that.
Yeah.
You know, we always laugh about our synchronicities or our lack of synchronicities, because they ultimately are synchronicities in the lack of synchronicity. You know, when things are not aligning, that is a synchronicity.
X and synchronicities.
Mm-hmm.
Yes. So where are we? We're about 10 minutes from the top of the hour, and so. Having arrived at our being very comfortable with ourself, mm-hmm. You know, and again, I can relate to that. I do a lot of things on my own, you know. I do this. I couldn't do a radio show like this with other people around because, first of all, they'd be making noise in the background. It would be like kind of, you know, one would feel rude. And they say, no, it's all right. And then they come in and say, do you want something? And I was like, no, I want you to be quiet and leave me alone. You know, and it's like, oh, I'm sorry. Well, let me apologize for another 15 minutes. No, just be quiet now and leave me alone now. And so you can't really explain that to people in a polite way. So, so you learn to get, you know, I make my own entertainment. I literally make my own entertainment. I make entertainment that entertains others, but in order to do so, I have to be alone. It's paradoxical, isn't it?
It is, kind of, isn't it?
We live in this paradox. And I think that's part of it, is the paradox is the thing that shows us that we need healing, that everything needs healing. And that the healing we need to do is to bring ourselves, to reassemble ourselves, unit by unit. And then, it's really the story of, I keep coming back to it. Do you know the, I don't know, we talked about this the other day, the story of Osiris?
Did we?
No, maybe not. Okay, we won't go there.
If you did, I was probably just drunk in the LAX airport from all the free alcohol I got on the plane.
Excellent. But that was. Oh, okay. So, is somebody massaging a wicker chair?
There is a wicker chair that I am resting my ankle on. I hope it is not bothering you.
Oh, it's okay. But it was making a kind of wicker chairy sound. Oh, that sounds like somebody.
It's very particular of you. I'm impressed with your hearing capabilities.
I'm an audio engineer. I know about sounds.
Yeah.
Anyway, I would say it was a wicker chair, approximately 18 inches in height and cubic.
Oh. Actually, I think this legs. One is about 24 inches in height, if you must.
That's a tall one. Huh? Mm-hmm. That's why it creaks so much. It's overextended.
Yep.
So, yeah, this is a very interesting subject. The subject of that which is known as ME or these other chronic fatigue things. There does seem to be an energy that people who experience this condition do seem to have, and this is like this internal driver, this like slave master, internalized slave master, that forces them to try and achieve and achieve and achieve and achieve and do good. And like, what's it all about, Katie?
Katie, I think you're the first person that's called me Katie.
Oh, do you like?
I actually, you know, a nickname of mine, just as a side tangent, when I was a kid, was KP. So it's funny, you're JP and I'm KP.
All right.
But anyway, yes. Yeah, there is that drive, it's a very painful one. And I think it's really born out of just this culture, honestly. There's just so much that we're just pressured to be and to do, especially as women. I don't mean to get on, like, you know, the feminist-y soapbox, because I don't really identify as a feminist. I know a lot of people who I'm friends with do. Maybe that makes me a feminist by association, I don't know. But
Express what your opinion is. You don't have to follow an ism on this show.
Yeah. I'm not much for isms. But my opinion, though, is that, you know, just even physically, nutritionally, everything like that, there's this culture around being something else. And, you know, no matter what it is that you are, you're always striving to be something else. Like for me, I was, you know, a healthy, you know, preteen girl, for instance, and then I developed a self-image issue because I thought that I should not be, like, a little heavier when I was a preteen, you know, about to go into puberty. And then I developed, like, this hatred and this desire to fixate and change the way I looked. And so that got embedded in my subconscious mind. And so when I matured more, I developed full-blown anorexia. I developed things that were just continuing to deteriorate my body on that physical level, as well as the energetic and emotional level. So people who tend to run, I mean, from my experience, I've talked with a lot of women who have had, you know, fibromyalgia, chronic fatigue, everything like that. There's this theme of, like, victimization. There's this theme of not being in control of your life and constantly trying to get control through other means and trying to have... Are we getting cut off?
We are going to be back in a few minutes' time. Don't go away, Katerina. Don't go away, listeners. We will be back with Katerina Edwards. Oh, yes, very exciting music. Here we are.
Yeah.
This is... oh, hello. Meanwhile, this is Journeys. I am JP. We're on No Borders Radio, All Spirit Radio, Revolution Radio, Ever Beyond Radio. So many radios, all these radios, all playing a different tune. Anyway, tonight I'm speaking with Katerina Edwards, and normally based in Oregon, is that right? And here you are in Costa Rica. You get around quite a bit, don't you? You travel. I mean, how does that work? I mean, it costs money to travel, and do people just say, I want you here, and we'll buy you a ticket?
No.
No?
I am an entrepreneur. And I'm self-supported. So, the internet is a very phenomenal tool. It connects you and allows you to be able to make your dreams turn into a reality when you have proper training and you have proper missions and goals. It doesn't work for people who are out there just trying to, you know, get rich quick or whatever. There are people out there that actually have very valuable ideas and tools and skill sets that are marketable. That's what I do, is I help people discover that about themselves, as well as, you know, utilize my own. What I'm going to be doing here in just a few short days is the first installment of probably quite a few of these creativity courses, where I'm going to be going through with quite a very interesting group of women. I think the group is going to cap out about 10, have 2 spots left. I think we'll probably be filled by the end of the week, and I'm going to be going through with these women, you know, as, for me, my professional title is really, you know, I am an artist. My primary focus is being an artist. That is my identity, my brand online, or whatever you want to call it. Because that's what, you know, I've poured most of my heart and soul into, being skillful and being a writer. And I have quite a bit of experience in terms of, you know, helping people unblock their creativity and helping people really undo a lot of the mental blocks and getting through some of that garbage that keeps them from being able to create the way that they want to and being able to really create a life of their own design, really. I mean, that's entirely what I do. My life is created by my own design, and I know I really rely a lot on synchronicity and spirituality and faith to make it all happen. And so that's why I'm in Costa Rica. I was actually only invited to Costa Rica, you know, like a week and a half ago. And here I am. And I'm here for about a month. And it's turned out to be this beautifully divine just experience. And my real mission is that I want to help as many other people as I can really realize that they don't have to be stuck in whatever it is that they're doing. They can really actually, you know, with the gifts that they have right now, do something very impactful. So I guess you would call me a creativity coach, I suppose. But yeah, that's really what I've been doing. And the course, you know, it is a paid course. It's a 3-month long course that I'm putting together, and it'll be gathering, you know, once a week on a webinar format hangout, and I'll be making myself available for coaching calls and, you know, having partners and assignments and tasks and everything like that. So yeah, I'm an entrepreneur, and I basically am helping other people live that more inspired, abundant, full life along the way, and showing other people how they can do it too.
Well, you certainly are very inspired, and it seems that you're getting around and inspiring lots of other people. So good on you, and more power to you. And well, you've only just begun, really.
Yeah, I'm excited about this direction because I feel like the gifts that I have, you know, from this whole past hour that I've been speaking about, you know, we only kind of just touched on that, you know, chronic fatigue thing, because I still actually want to get back into that, because I wasn't finished.
Yeah, go ahead.
After I finish this tangent. You know, the whole gamut of experience that I have with everything in those regards, I feel has made me into a much more able listener. Like, I don't really think of people, I mean, I don't know if people really think of themselves as being able or capable listeners, but I'm a lot more able to see other people's issues and help them work through them, because I feel like I have, you know, invested a lot of time in cultivating that self-awareness and interpersonal awareness. You know, while I don't hold any degrees, I hold a lot more stuff of value, which is, you know, life experience and years of just delving headfirst into this stuff. So people have identified me as such, and, you know, I've been able to create a business and brand around that. And I'm very fortunate that these experiences in my life have not been for naught, and they're actually being put to good use, and people are getting value out of the things that I have to share. And I'm so grateful every day for, you know, all of my Facebook friends and all of the people who follow my stuff and share it around, because if it weren't for them, you know, none of this would be possible for me. And I would be able to share with other people how it's possible too, you know? So it's this whole just cycle of inspiration, and I never forget the people who make this happen for me, and I'm just so grateful for them. So I really want to just, like, make that clear for everyone that, you know, I am because we are.
Nice way of putting it. So, being in the position that you are, I mean, rather growing up having these chronic diseases and chronic places where you're separated from people, you weren't doing what all the other 16-year-olds were doing. You were on a much more psychological inner journey at that point. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it must be a very difficult time. Again, like you were saying before, you didn't want to miss anything. You didn't want to miss out on anything. Yet it was, you know, impossible for you to join in on most things that people of your age are doing. You know, I had some issues of that, and I can kind of...
Didn't it feel empty?
I don't remember it being empty.
For me, it felt very empty. Like, if I would try to partake in, you know, the latest gossip or, you know, the latest la 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 la, you know, I just felt so bored.
Oh, their stuff empty, yes.
Yeah. No, not my stuff being empty. My stuff was freaking dynamic. It was crazy. But, yeah.
No, yeah, I see what you mean. Well, nothing really made sense. Nothing made sense until I came across my spiritual teacher when I was 20. That was the first time anybody ever made sense.
I understand that.
Yeah, and, you know, nothing but that level of consciousness will do for me, really. Nothing else makes sense. So that's why I started doing this radio, because I was looking for people with a high consciousness that I can actually learn from, and I...
Beautiful.
So I speak to some very interesting people. It's very nice. Very nice indeed. So, you touched on something earlier, and you said I'll want to come back to that.
Yes. Okay, so I was talking about the chronic fatigue and how people actually get themselves into those messes, and women in this culture, particularly, you know, trying to make themselves be something else that they're not, and, you know, fighting tooth and nail in order to make that happen for themselves. And, you know, the successful ones typically incur a lot of damage, you know, anywhere from infertility to just mental disturbance, malnourishment, depression, mood swings. You know, for me, I developed PCOS, which is polycystic ovarian syndrome, which rendered me incapable of, you know, being fertile for a while. And, you know, missing your menstrual cycle for a year, you know, that's not normal as, you know, an 18-year-old woman, you know. But it's things like this that happen because we're just so conditioned to wanting to change ourselves and be something different, to the point where we equate that with being loved. You know, being that different self means I'll finally get to be loved. It means I'll finally get to be approved of. It means I'll finally get, you know, the man of my dreams or the body of my dreams or the job of my dreams or the whatever it is that I want. Because we live in this fantasy land of thinking that, you know, that kind of striving doesn't have any physical repercussion, which is completely wrong and leads us in to many dark alleys, and ones that I have traversed many times myself and seen my loved ones around me. You know, my older sister battled bulimia and periods of intermittent anorexia for, you know, 10 years after her abuse, and she equated it with being desirable and, you know, finally being able to be loved for, you know, finally being able to be loved the way that she never thought she could be loved. And what she found was that she felt more empty. You know, when I was 98 pounds soaking wet, I felt more hideous and more unattractive than I had ever felt in my entire life. I felt less lovable. I felt less beautiful. I felt more neurotic and more obsessive and more, like, just completely out of balance. I would snap. I would get very angry. I would, you know, it was a very, very dark period of my life. And the thing that happens afterwards is your body actually has, you know, physical response to that. You know, some people develop fibromyalgia. Some people develop the chronic fatigue. And all of this is just a response to the chronic abuse that we had been undergoing. And I really don't feel like people develop, you know, chronic fatigue or any of these chronic illnesses for no reason. You know, there's a reason that your immune system is underfunctioning, and there's a reason that your whole system is just out of whack. You know, fibromyalgia is multi-systematic failure. You know, multiple systems in your body are just going to hell, basically. And it takes you out of the situation for a minute and makes you realize, hey, wait, there's something wrong. There's something going on here. And that was really the gem in all of my experience, was that I got to really dissect one by one, like, what the fuck is happening to me? How is this happening? Because, you know, growing up in a culture where everyone's doing it, you don't realize, like, how damaging it really is. And I think that that's, you know, why in France in particular is when I really started realizing how fucked up the whole thing was, is because I looked around and I saw that all the healthy women there had a, you know, good relationship with, like, food, and they had a good relationship with their bodies, and they had healthy relationships with other people, and they weren't isolating themselves, and they weren't, like, social outcasts like I was, you know? I completely, you know, detached myself from, like, personal relationships because I felt like I had a secret that was so big that I just couldn't have, like, a vulnerable, authentic relationship with somebody and still keep my secret. So I chose my relationship with, you know, anorexia over relationships with other people and a relationship with myself, you know?
In one of the biggest cases.
And that's typically what happens, too, when people are very sick, is that they are in a relationship with their illness, and there isn't much room for deep, deep relationship with other people. And, I mean, I'm talking particularly about, like, self-inflicted, like, chronic illnesses here. You know, I'm not speaking about all illnesses, by the way, just for clarification. So, yeah.
On the other hand, I would, you know, you know, things happen, and, you know, we put ourselves in danger, and then we get a broken leg. And you think, that's not psychosomatic. Well, is it? You know?
Well, maybe.
My mind put me in that place where there was going to be a dangerous thing that was going to go crush my leg. You know? Uh-huh. My mind pulled that accelerator on the motorbike. My mind decided to go out at that moment. You know? Mm-hmm. We are because we're what we need to be. You know, things happen because they need to happen. And
yeah.
You know, our bodies have these ways of reining us back in, I think is a good way of saying it. It's like, mm-hmm. And also the self-abuse, because we're trained to abuse ourselves. It's like, help the police, beat yourself up. We're trained mm-hmm. to submit and conform. And all of these things, from the moment we're born, we're traumatized into doing, and eventually we're traumatized into believing things that are essentially they're bad software, they're malware. One of the things that the period of illness that you experience, you know, you're on your back for 3 weeks or something. That's the period of time that you're needing in order to reflect and see where that, and the end of it, the cure of it is to cure yourself of the belief system, which is basically a bad program. It's something that somebody said to you once that has affected the way you think for the rest of your life.
And it oh my
the,
goodness!
The oddest little comment somebody made.
I have a very, if you don't mind, I have a very
go right ahead.
Powerful story that you just said that, which, you know, ties back into this whole thing. It was my prom. I was 16 years old. It's not my prom. It was my boyfriend at the time's prom. He was senior in high school. Here I am. I had just spent all of this money, you know, getting all dolled up for this prom. And, you know, I had the dress, I had the hair, I had the nails, I had, you know, the makeup. And here I felt just, like, dressed beautifully. I had invested so much time into my image, you know. And I'm about, you know, 5'2" at this time, about, like, 130 pounds or something like that. My boyfriend, he's 6'1" or something, and, you know, 125 pounds. He's very, very thin. And he had made a comment that night, you know, and it had stuck. It had, like, seared itself into my mind because of, you know, the already pre-frames of the cultural conditioning that I had, you know. And he said something to the effect of, like, oh, you know, it'd be nice if you weren't so chubby. And, you know, at this point, I was, like, devastated because I didn't really experience myself as being, you know, quote-unquote chubby. But I guess, you know, he said it, so it must be true. So I need to do something about it, you know? And I need to fix it because I can't be unlovable and I can't be something that is not desirable. And I want his attention and I want to be with him because he's my boyfriend and I have to please him. And I have to, you know, make sure that everything's okay and kosher. So, you know, what am I going to do? Oh, yeah, I think I'm going to, like, you know, eat, like, maybe no more than, like, 400 calories a day for, you know, a period of time, and, you know, let's just see what happens, you know? And this was my mentality as this vulnerable 16-year-old girl who, you know, already had pretty shaky self-worth, and, you know, this one good thing she had going in her life, this boyfriend, you know, that felt unsafe and insecure. And what do we do when something feels unsafe and insecure? We want to hold on to it. And what do? We put ourselves in the line of danger in order to have that happen. And that's what I did. And over the next period of a couple of months, you know, dropped a lot of weight and became very ill. And the saddest thing was that he never realized that that benign comment affected me so deeply. And it wasn't until actually about three months ago that I actually got to sit down with him all those years later, you know, 5 years later after the fact, and tell him that that benign comment created all of this. You know, the eventual demise of our relationship, the illness that I was going through. He never realized, and he felt horrible for it. But I was brave enough to tell him, even though I had been holding on to such resentment towards him for all those years. And, you know, I hated men for a while because I was just like, oh, they all of them just want to, you know, change women into being like these thin, pretty little, like, sticks. And they don't really want to love us for who we are. And he felt horrible. And the change that came out of that conversation with him, you know, recently was amazing. And there was such a healing that happened when I got to take him through some of my old notebooks that I had written at the time, you know, filled with all of these aspirations for being something else, you know, thinspiration, all this kind of stuff. It shocked him because he did not realize the effect to which his small comment affected this cataclysm. And it made him very, very, very aware that the words that he shares with people are very powerful, especially the loved ones or the supposed loved ones in his life. And so I think that story was brought to mind because I feel like maybe there are some people on the line right now that maybe the small little things that you share with people, that you say to people, maybe you're not really realizing how that is impacting them in a long-term sense. It's very, very damaging when somebody is already vulnerable to, you know, slip something out. And it's on one hand, maybe the person needed to have an experience to kind of fulfill their own, like, karmic cycle or whatever. But on the other hand, we also have control of what comes out of our mouths. And, you know, especially if it's somebody that's near to you. And you say that you love them, but yeah, those little benign comments are very potent.
When you say it was a benign comment, was it was he being sarcastic? Was he just saying, you know, is like, because, you know, you call tall people shorty, you know, in that sort of bantery way, or was it?
I'm sure it probably was something along the lines, because I mean, when he clarified it for me, you know, recently, he said, you know, my family, we're just like that. We joke about things like that. And for him, his tone was very uncertain, and it was said in a context in which it felt very serious, but I could see how his upbringing kind of didn't really delineate that for him. Like, for me, it felt like the end of the world, to the point where I just, you know, operation you know, change yourself, went into full action. And it was just, you know, things happen like that, where the people, they're just not on the same wavelength, and one person takes it and moves the other way. But, you know, that's why I think clarification, being able to advocate for yourself, is really important. Because if I had a chance to do it over, and I don't regret the things that happened, but if I had a chance to do it over with what I know now, I would have clarified, you know, what his meaning was. And if I had had 21-year-old Katerina knowledge at 16-year-old Katerina's age, I probably would have dumped the guy, because I was like, you know, if you're going to be that insensitive and rude and inconsiderate about, you know, the people that you associate with, I really don't want to spend much time with you anymore. And I don't feel like this is a good dynamic for me to work within. So, you know, it's that self-awareness, you know. But if you don't have those experiences where you do things all wrong, you're never going to have the experiences where you actually can make better choices for yourself, you know.
It's so nice to talk to somebody who's, like, right, actually making the pathway upwards instead of making the pathway round, around, 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 around. It's very refreshing. So, and, you know, I'm sure you've had the same experience when you see that dawning look on people's faces as they get what you're saying.
Yeah. I think it's really cool. I like seeing, you know, like the awareness light up in people's eyes, and, you know, them coming to new realizations about what's possible for themselves and their futures, and that they don't have to stay stuck in the stuff that they're, you know, cycling in. That there is a way out. There really is. And the way out is through. The way out is to experience. It's to allow, and, you know, that acceptance, that really deep acceptance, that you can't fake acceptance. You can't fake insight.
Yeah.
You can't. True insight.
Because you can feel it. If somebody's saying it, oh yeah, I get it. And you just know one actually feels when somebody else's penny drops, you can feel it. That's why they call it the penny drops. There's this kind of feeling. As something clicks into place, and what was an aura of confusion then becomes an aura of crystal clarity, at least for the moment. Mm-hmm. And you can sense that if you've got the senses to sense that, I suppose.
That's why I love working with people so much, you know, and the kind of work that I do is because I'm not doing anything. I'm just being that mirror for the other person to come to their realizations and their clarity on their own. And it's such a beautiful thing for me to see another person just come into that full awareness and light of realization, and to realize that they're the start and the end of their own suffering, and for them to realize that, you know, there's more to this than I was seeing. That paradigm shift, that genuine, you know, as Dave, my friend, would like to call it, that they took their paradigm shit, and they shat in that bucket, and now they have this bucket full of shit. What are they going to do with it? They're going to, you know, use it as fertilizer for the garden, you know, in his very base metaphor. I totally love that metaphor, though, by the way, Dave, if you're listening. I think it's so genius because it just accesses people on a different level, a level that everyone understands. But
it's seventh ray folk are really into the poo jokes, you know.
The poo jokes.
It's actually, you know, you're absolutely right. As an abstract, I used to join in, and sometimes still do join in with the odd powwow with some of the First Nations on, there's various stages, and the first stage is very, very, everybody very polite and introducing themselves, you know, I'm such and such, the son of such, you know, and then the thing continues, and then about 2/3 of the way through, there's a denouement, and somebody cracks a poo joke. And
oh,
or
really?
Mentions it, and it's a phase, and it's part of the process. So, yeah, you know, I've had raw sewage pumping up through my basement. Oh, well, not my basement, but through my drains, just by my house here. And so there's been a lot of that recently. And, you know, what's been happening in the last couple of weeks, Katerina, for me, and I think for a lot of people, and probably for yourself as well, is that there's these old wounds, for a better word, for want of a better word, of old stuff, of old poo, of old unproperly decomposed materials, unprocessed, undischarged, like the feeling that you had for your friend here. Mm-hmm. That these things have been coming up, and often to do with rage as well.
Yeah.
So much rage. Everybody's really pissed.
Oh, I've had my own moments. Yeah. Really, really intense moments. Because most of you probably don't know me very well at all. But I was in a relationship with this guy, you know, for about a year. And I had been processing, you know, I at least thought I'd been processing my feelings of rage towards him, but had been just recirculating over and over and over again because, you know, something would happen, it would trigger it again. Make a long story short, the guy, he cheated on me like twice within the course of our relationship, and I've been cheated on before in other relationships. And there was always a sense of, you know, like, how could he? You know, this indignant, like, how could he? I'm amazing. How could he do that to me? You know, this
how
is like
dare
this
he?
Part of me. How dare he? You know, the part of me that, you know, my mom always talked to and told me, you know, Katerina, it's not about being, or not, it's not about finding the right one. It's about being the right one. And, you know, all of these kind of like trite isms that I would follow. And, you know, I would try to follow it to a T, and then, you know, it still wouldn't work. And I was like, what's wrong with this picture? I know I'm being wonderful. I really want them to love me. What is it that they don't love about me? Oh my gosh, they're telling me that they love me, but all their actions are indicating otherwise, right? So I had this rage, just bloody rage against, you know, all of the men who had hurt me, all of the unfinished business I felt that I had with this boyfriend of mine. And, you know, I was going through a phase where I was, you know, probably getting really upset with him, you know, like a couple times a week. And it would just be over things that just were very, you know, seemingly benign. Just like, you know, the whole thing with my ankle. You know, I got into such a deep despair today over something that was loaded from the past. And it was like that loaded gun that all you had to do was kind of just rub it, and then the trigger went off, and it was just like, you know, bullets flying everywhere.
Yeah,
that's how it was for me. You know, I even had to go to therapy sessions with John, my previous boyfriend now, because I felt like I was suffering from, like, post-traumatic stress just from dealing with, you know, the experience of him cheating on me. The reason I stayed with him was because I thought that we could work it out. The relationship is still pretty fresh, and we both were pretty conscious of, like, wanting to work things through and discuss things, and we were friends first, and, you know, there was a whole slew of things, and just for the sake of wanting to go deeper into a relationship rather than just severing it and cutting ties and being like, I'm done with you, blah, 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 and being really societal about it, I thought it was a good thing that I, you know, stuck it out and tried to work through my emotions about it, because, you know, ultimately at the end of the day, everything's about me, right? It was all about my perceptions, and, you know, but, you know, that's true to a point, and I don't ever advocate anyone staying in a relationship that they really are not happy in, because I've done it, and it's not good for you. So this whole, like, Costa Rica thing has just been kind of my declaration to myself that I don't have to operate under conditions in which I'm not happy. I don't. And, you know, I love him to death. I really do. But all the rage that I had been experiencing was just coming from these places of feeling just distrusting and suspicious and paranoid and frustrated deeply, just very deeply, deeply frustrated with the fact that he could not see how his actions were continuing to impact me, you know. And I struggled with it for a while, and, you know, I questioned myself a lot, questioned whether or not it was me that was just overreacting. And then I came to a point where I realized that we were just two very different people who have two very different perspectives. And at a certain point, it got to a place where I realized it was kind of irreconcilable. And I feel like the kindest thing that you can do for both people is to just allow that person to move on through your life. And the funny thing that happened is after we broke up, you know, we went through a period of, like, you know, a few days where we didn't talk, but we met back up for dinner and spoke again and realized that this is ultimately what both of us really wanted, was to feel free and to be able to be, the person that we always wanted to be with each other, our friendship, a deep friendship. And to not feel constrained or constricted by this title of boyfriend, girlfriend, you hurt me, you cheated on me, I hate you, you know, could you do this to me? You know, that whole drama, you know, that whole dynamic that really keeps two people very stuck and not really able to connect on that deep level. So.
And yeah,
a lot of rage was let go with that.
Excellent. Excellent. Well done. Because that's a real sticking point for a lot of people.
It's not easy, and I don't ever want anyone to think it is. But there's lots of tears that were involved in that process, so don't let me, like, try to, like, spiritually sugarcoat that for you, because it's fucking painful.
I think tears are good. I'm really... See,
I'm a good fan of a good sad song too.
Actually, I just have to watch Star Trek. I'm easy. I never got
into Star Trek.
All right. Well, anything, you know, Babylon 5, whatever it is, there's always a point that's poignant, and my eyes just say, okay, can I just, yeah, okay, on you go.
For me, it's Coldplay. All I have to do is turn on Coldplay, and I'm just gone.
Yeah.
Oh. Coldplay. It's just tied with a lot of just like really like pinnacle points in my life where, you know, the heights of sadness or the heights of joy. So I can be moved to tears of sadness or joy with just the same Coldplay song. It's very interesting. So
it's that old piano there.
Yeah, the piano. No,
that piano chord. Dang, you know, it's then and you know, everything.
Yeah.
But you know, some musicians absolutely nail the emotion. I mean, he's got.
I love that.
Yeah.
Yeah, I love that so much. That's what I strive for in my paintings, is just to nail that emotion.
Yeah.
And it happens, you know, when you're open to it and you're open to seeing things in that way and you're open to experiencing the intuition for what it is. It's really a beautiful thing.
So, yes, nailing the emotion. I've been looking at color and healing and frequency. Well, I'm always, you know, everybody knows I'm into frequencies and healings and things like that. But I found a website that gives you the periodic table as tones. So you can listen to all the elements. And it's amazing because I hit magnesium, right? Mm-hmm. And I could feel all my teeth going jingle, jangle, jingle, jangle, jingle. Oh, that's what we need. We need some of that. Yeah, some magnesium, please. And then I hit calcium and then, you know, my bones were going, oh, jingle, jangle, jingle, jangle. Hey, I need some of this as well. So it's a fascinating thing. I can't remember. Where did I put it? But it's a, an amazing website where you can actually see or hear and therefore feel every element.
Mm-hmm.
And how they connect.
Yeah, send that over my way. I'd love to check it out.
I'll pull that up. Yeah. Representing emotion. Where do you start? Do you start with the emotion and then get the color, or do you just kind of randomly blob until you get something?
No.
My
whole process of creating art has been very intuitive. You know, from the point of, you know, just really tapping into that feeling. Like this is kind of how my process of creating art goes. I have an experience where I listen to a song or I see something, and I automatically just kind of turn inward and observe how, you know, the feelings and the interaction of, you know, all the stimulus are affecting me. And then I kind of go and, oh wait, I don't want to put this on paper. I think I want to write that. I think I want to draw this. And, you know, the shapes kind of start shaping themselves out of, like, the feelings that I'm feeling. And, you know, line work is very similar to that. And then, you know, if it's time for color, you know, my hand just naturally gravitates towards whatever it is that I'm looking for and, you know, to try to best represent that. And, it's a very, very intuitive process, and I'm very oftentimes very pleased with the outcome because I didn't have to have a lot of conscious thought. So I know a lot of artists that, you know, they really plan meticulously their paintings, but I've never been someone like that, you know. And if some of you want to look at some of my paintings, you can find it on my Facebook art page, KaterinaEdwards.art, you know, facebook.com/KaterinaEdwards.art. And the main picture there, if you want to look at it right now, there's this woman. She's twirling her hair back, and she's just kind of going into this ecstatic state, and she's just feeling all these feelings. And I think this painting is about 4 feet by 4 feet, and it only took me about 6 hours total to do. And I tell people that, and they're just so amazed, but I'm not really that amazed because I know what happens when you kind of step out of your own way and you just let creativity and inspiration kind of just take you over, and you're really in this state of flow, and you're just operating from that, and, you know, all of the movements that you need to make in order to make the brush stroke just right, or to, you know, have the color placement right, or, you know, layering or anything like that, you know, it's just this automatic process that when you have this intention set of the experience, the mood, the feeling you're going for, you know, synchronicity, spirit just dictates how that's supposed to show up. And the same goes for me when I'm singing or when I'm writing. The writing, just the words flow because the energy which I'm tapping into, which I pre-framed and, you know, connected to through, you know, wanting to connect to a certain feeling or emotion or experience, allows me to find the right words. Like this whole conversation I've had with you, JP, I had no idea what I was going to talk about tonight. But I feel like this has been really effective because I knew the energy and the feeling that I wanted to convey. And so the words just came. Have you ever had that experience?
When do I don't? The only time I don't is actually I never. I'm kind of like this all the time when I make music.
Awesome.
You know, I'm in a band and I'm supposed to play like these set guitar solos, and I can never play the thing right because it's always got to have a noodle in it. I can't just play it like a robot. I'm not a bloody MIDI machine. If you wanted a perfect guitar solo, get somebody to play it on MIDI and tweak it and then get it to be a recording. I'm a human, awesome. human blues guitar player. I'm going to add my noodles if you don't mind. Sort of thing. So I do it all the time. I'm sorry?
I said I'd love to hear some of your stuff sometime.
Oh, I got loads of stuff because I've been in loads of bands. Mm-hmm. So I've got stuff from being in bands, and then I got stuff that I produced myself of these spontaneous noodles that come, and some of them work, some of them don't. Mm-hmm. But I spent a lot of time in the last 10 years, 15 years. Learning about A, group dynamics, and B, music, by holding a jam session every week, for 8 months.
Cool.
It was, you know, I'm not very good at committing, so I thought, I'll do that. So, that was my thing. So I have a new, thing that it's going to be, which is, the kind of radio version of that. So eventually there will be live creativity that is expressed out onto the web. so other people can participate.
It's exciting.
Yeah.
I like that direction. That sounds like perfectly up your path. Cool.
Excellent. So, yeah, so I put the spectro table thing in the, in both the chat rooms. And did I put one in this one? I probably didn't, no. There it is. Alright. Yeah, no, I haven't. There we go.
Do me a favor too and send that to me in a Facebook message as well.
Sure. I'll post it on Facebook and I'll put your name on it. But, just for the crack, this is magnesium.
That's so weird.
And this is calcium.
No kidding.
Amazing, isn't it?
No kidding. Oh my gosh, I totally see what you're saying. I honestly I wasn't going to make an opinion either way because I was like, oh, okay, JP, he's into some weird stuff. You weren't joking.
Yeah.
Oh,
so
that's funny.
Because, you know, everything's frequency and everything relates to frequency and, you know, people and relationships and chakras and personality energies and all that. Everything's got frequencies. And it's fascinating to actually look at the periodic table and you look at, like, what do the noble gases sound like? You know, let's have a quick look at, like, this is... helium and neon and argon. Let's just see what these are like. That is helium.
My head kind of shake.
Neon. Oh, that is interesting. That was quite, this is argon.
Interesting.
A lot of them sound like stuff out of Star Trek. I mean, where was it? One of them sounded really like, was it gold or mercury? Let's hear mercury. Oh yeah, and that is quite an unpleasant sound, and mercury does have that unpleasant vibration. All these CFL tubes, these light bulbs. That's what you're feeling. And then, interesting, mercury is next to gold, is gold. Yeah, that was the Star Trek sound. It sounded like the beaming up sound in Star Trek.
Yeah.
And here's silver. This is the last one, silver. How cool is that?
That's amazing.
Oh, they're doing the washing up now. They couldn't wait.
Oh, yeah. I do have to get going. So,
Well, we've got about 10 minutes to go. Katrina, now, this is a moment where you can publicize yourself. And, give people links and numbers and contacts and how to find you, when to find you, how you can be, chased all around the world using GPS and, longitude and Google Maps. Here's your moment.
Okay, well, if you would like to get in contact with me, there is a way to, and that's mainly through Facebook. My personal profile is quite active. That's where I spend a lot of my time and my energy. And you can find me by searching for my name, Katerina Edwards, KaterinaEdwards. And, you know, you can follow my trip here and Costa Rica and my trips beyond this, my trips before this, you know, I posted all right there. And you know, JP's asked me for my blog link and everything like that, but it is a work in progress at the moment. So it is www.katarinaedwardslovestheblog.com. And I did mention that I have two more spots available in my creativity course, and if for some reason synchronicity dictates that one of you would like to be a participant in that, and you've liked, you know, what you've heard on this call, I would love to connect with you and perhaps set up an interview to see whether or not this would be a good fit for you to be a participant. I'm considering all the people who I have, like, applying for this pretty carefully and only selecting, like, you know, a good 10 that I really think would be good for this trial test beta group. And, so yeah, just send me a message over on Facebook and I will be in touch with you, and then we can connect over Skype or on the phone if you prefer. So yeah, that's pretty much where I'm at and what I have to offer you all at the moment. So I really appreciate everyone listening, and just great conversation as we've had, JP. Thank you.
You're very welcome, Katrina. And yeah, we'll talk more in the future. Good luck with all your courses and all the things that you do. And yeah, we'll talk further down the line. Thank you very much for coming on Journeys.
Thank you so much, JP.
Okay. So, yeah, you can disconnect if you like. There we go. So, thanks very much, Katarina. Good night. So there we go. We have about 5 minutes left, so not really long enough to, unless somebody calls in right now, it's probably who wants to add anything to that, or if there's any questions that you'd like to ask me about. You find Sound Me Record yet? No, I haven't done that. I haven't found your sound, you know, recorded yet. Yes, so there you go. So you've had plenty of stuff from the chat room there. With Dave's posted plenty of his videos, so you can have a look at all that. And so I've got no guests booked for the next few periods. I'd like to do some Ray readings. I'd like to do some more Ray teachings and stuff like that over Christmas. I want to talk more about the litanies. If anybody missed last night's litany, I'm going to clip it out of my show from last night and pop it into a separate folder and publicize it on, yeah, I'll put it on everbeyond.info and I'll pop it on Facebook as well. All these events. Well, I don't know. I don't want to get to that point in the conversation. It looks like they're already there at the chat room now. But I know it's Journeys with JP, but there you go. Where was I? Well, I was talking about the litanies. If you want to join in, just jump on. Contact me in whatever way you want, JP at everbeyond.info, or on my Facebook, j.p.000, and I'll send you a copy of the litanies. It's like your commitment to the birth of the soul, the Christ. Same thing, in your heart. It's a cycle. Happens every year, and every year that you do it, make more of a promise of it, the greater the consciousness that you experience the next year as it comes round in the cycle. It's the real meaning of Christ Mass. The present, you basically your the wish list. You're saying, yes, I'm willing to do this, and I'm willing to give this up, and I'd like a bit more of that, please. That being the consciousness of the source. And most of the so Looking at the litanies last night was about the first ray, which is the desire, the will, expressing the will to go through the process, which is quite, you know, it does take quite a bit of will. Where are we? Yes. It's pretty dramatic sounding, you know, I'm ready to be burned and consumed, for that is what birth is. I'm ready to be naked and unprotected and to suffer from my nakedness, you know. So basically you're ready to uncover what the ego is covering, the light that is held beneath the bucket, the bushel. I'm ready to make the pilgrimage to matter in darkness and in fire, so that the circle of the uncreate shall become one with the circle of the create. Now this rather mystical statement is, the circle of the uncreate becomes one with the circle of the create. It's like when something is magnetized, it starts to form structure. Things lock together. Once the structure is, then the mechanism, and then the covering. So the muscles and the skin. There is much unformed matter in the universe. There's plenty of stuff for us to move into. Plenty of space, which is expanding all the time. How does that work? I don't know. Anyway, the universe is expanding. Everything's expanding. And up next week. We get some readings beyond.